your contact information.
Okay.
And that it's okay to use this.
Okay. My name is William Henry. My telephone number is 615-292-5397. It's okay to use this.
Okay, great. Yeah. Great. And can you give me your website?
My website is williamhenry.net.
Okay.
Fantastic.
I know you want to be done by 6, so.
Do you guys mind if we...
I'm sorry, guys.
We got to walk off.
Oh, okay.
We're going to leave now.
Ciao.
Sorry.
I appreciate it. Sorry about that.
But you guys will be here for a little while, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, till 6. Okay, great, great.
We didn't hear the countdown, sorry.
All right.
Wow. That's a new one for me. So, you got to interview George Norrie, huh?
Yeah, I had to kick him out.
So, let's start off just by talking about this particular event and how you feel about the energy here and the work that these people are trying to do.
Okay. I love events like Quantum Shift 2012 because they're, first of all, they're aimed north. They're aimed at a high spiritual level. It's not all about trying to scare the pants off of you, where it's like, you know, as I said in my presentation, I've heard these guys coming out saying, you know, we're going to have food riots in the street, we're going to have tax revolts, we're going to have secession of states, we're going to have all kinds of just chaos. And it's like, well, you know, that's a possibility, but... You know, what's the point in focusing on that? I mean, what's that going to do for you? It's really not going to take you anywhere personally except driving you right into fear. And I realize fear sells, but what really we need to be aiming for is at a much higher level of all of ourselves individually as well as collectively. And that's why I enjoy an event like this.
Well, you know, I'm going to digress just a bit and go off to the side, but the History Channel lately has been just... hitting this with this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That I'm beginning to call it the We're History Channel. You know, it's like Armageddon Week, you know, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about the mainstream media and their participation or lack thereof
mm-hmm.
in helping to forward the collective consciousness.
Mm-hmm. Mainstream media, I mean, and I talk with authors all the time that have appeared on some of the like History Channel type shows and that. They take their work, run it through their shredder, and it comes out literally unrecognizable. Because they have an agenda. They know that the fear sells and they want to keep everybody locked into that. And I understand that, and that's why I don't participate in presentations such as that, because I've been through that with a couple of them before. You know exactly what they're going to do, but they never will. They always bring out the sheep first. They bring out the really nice producer, sometimes a really good-looking woman, and, oh, we think your work is great, and what you're doing is fantastic. Then the next thing you know, well, she's not on the project anymore. Her wolf boss is, and here comes the heavy coming in, laying on the agenda and taking your words and spinning them. And it's like, I loved the Jon Stewart-Kramer tussle recently, because Jon Stewart called Kramer to account saying, you know, CNBC, what are you guys selling? You guys maintain you're talking to all these CEOs, they're lying through their teeth to you, you know it, and you're reporting their BS. And I, you know, personally for a long time I've thought that the media should be open to prosecution. If you can prove deliberate mind manipulation, which is what they're doing, prosecute them. And I think that that's kind of the direction Jon Stewart was going, is we're going to start prosecuting these people on public. If anybody saw what Stewart did to Kramer, I mean, the guy was just sitting there squirming because all Jon Stewart was doing was holding a candle of truth. So this is what you guys are saying. This is what you're doing. I think that should happen across the board. I think there should be, as Stewart proposed, a watchdog organization that looks at the financial media and sees what they're reporting. I think the mainstream media also needs to be held accountable. There should be an organization that looks at these guys, prosecute some of these on-the-air talking heads. They say, oh, I don't write the news, I just report it. Well, why don't you go deliver garbage, because that's all you're doing anyway, you know? And you're calling it news, but it's pure garbage. Take it to the landfill with the rest of the crap you guys are spewing out there, because what you're doing is endangering people, and they know it. And that's why I think they should be held liable for what they're doing.
So one of the people I interviewed just very recently, like days ago, was David Icke.
Mm.
And, you know, we had everybody knows where he's coming from
as far as
stuff. Do you think that the conspiracy is really that vast through the media, or that they're just a we're going to make what sells machine?
I'm not a conspiracy theorist per se, but you can definitely see that there is an agenda. And the agenda is to make money, no matter what it is. They don't care what garbage they've got on there, so long as it's making money. And so, you know, we just have to be aware that that's what's going on. I mean, are there, you know, seven guys sitting in New York telling all these folks what to put out? I don't know. I remember when Dan Brown's Da Vinci Code hit. It's such a phenomena these days that it makes you wonder. I was in Paris when the book came out. 2 weeks later, the book is all over the planet. And it makes you wonder, well, how does that happen? You know, how does a guy come out of literally nowhere and have this global bestseller? I've talked with Jordan Maxwell about this. And of course, Jordan, like David Icke, would say, well, they wanted that book out there, and so they made dang sure that they got all the exposure it could. But, you know, then there was that extra thing that causes people to reach in their pocket and fork over $25. So there's, you know, a lot to be said for conspiracy, but a lot to be said that this is just kind of the global mind making up its mind.
Now, one of the things, you know, obviously we're in challenging times. Mm-hmm. And there seems to be a pretty good idea of what we have to do collectively to solve these problems, get past it, and evolve a better species at the other side of this. Mm-hmm. But talk a little bit about what you see it taking and what it's going to be like if we're successful in getting from here to mm-hmm. there. What's that journey collectively going to be like for people?
Well, first thing we have to get away from is worshiping the almighty dollar. I mean, that's the root of it. The love of money is the root of all evil, and what's happening on our planet right now is evil. It's a spiritual war that's being propagated right now, and people have to recognize that because it's ultimately affecting them spiritually. And so how do we get away from that? Well, you look at the symbolism of the dollar itself, which is simply a rod with a serpent hung on it. Well, I mean, that's a symbol for the dollar today, but in the ancient world, that was the symbol for example, Moses lifting the serpent of healing in the wilderness. It's a symbol for raising our vibration, raising kundalini. And I think that that's kind of the place to start, is to recognize that we're all sacrificing our bodies every day for money. And all money is energy. And if we can find other ways to exchange our energy, our mental, physical, spiritual, and emotional energy, that will present a shift. And I mean, I remember when I first started talking at expos and conferences back in 96, I always used to cite the UN numbers that said 50% of the world's population does not have access to a toilet and is 2.5 days walk from the nearest telephone. This was 95, 96. 2.5 days walk from the nearest telephone, no toilet. While the rest of us are over here in the West thinking everything's just great. It had to come back. This imbalance had to come back. And I think that's what's happening now, is that we're starting to see, well, wait a minute, you know, we're starting to live, you know, there's a risk that we're going to live more like those people that don't have a toilet and a telephone than they're going to be elevated towards us. And that's what, you know, that other half is looking for. They want the satellite dishes. They want the cars. Look at China. I mean, that's where they're motivated right now. But as the UN even said then, we can't have another couple hundred million people with cars and refrigerators and cell phones and all that, because the planet's not going to sustain it under our current model. And look at where we're at right now. It's that's coming home to roost.
Now, let's talk about the possibility of actually being able to keep that mm-hmm. on a global scale mm-hmm. By capitalizing on sustainable potential,
right.
by really coming together as a species,
yeah.
and saying, okay, look, we can make energy literally for free. We can do these things,
right?
And if we quit making weapons, we could solve all the world's food problems.
Right, exactly.
What do you think it's going to take to make that happen, and do you think that it's possible?
I think what it's going to take to cause that flip is, if not divine intervention, it's certainly a change in consciousness. And as I cite frequently, you know, 500 years ago, if I said to the church that the earth is not the center of the universe, it would have been killed instantly. Galileo is arrested for saying something like that. Copernicus is hassled, right? And so now we are just 500 years later recognizing the earth's not the center of anything. The sun, in fact, isn't the center of anything, that we're all orbiting the center of the galaxy. And what that does is it opens up our worldview and expands us out of the I and into the we. And so that's really a first place for it to start. And once we start looking at that, it's like, well, wait a minute. Where's all this technology going that we can look into the stars? Where's all this NASA technology we were all promised and everything? Let's start bringing that on board and recognizing that the next step for us is to harness the power of our local star. Dr. Michio Kaku talks about this, is that, you know, we're a type zero civilization struggling to become type one. He says we're at least 1 million years away from becoming a type two or even a three civilization. And I think that I don't agree with that. I think we're much closer to being able to become a civilization capable of colonizing our solar system and moving out into the galaxy than scientists give us credit. And all it takes is just a motivation to do that. And we've got plenty of that right now.
You know, another thing, you know, talking about Michio's work that he is big on is that civilization reaches a certain point where it either A, destroys
right.
itself, or B,
right.
progresses past.
Now, yeah.
do you think that that milestone and 2012 have a correlation?
I think it's a really interesting possibility that Kaku's demarcation point from a type 0 to a type 1, that ultimate gap, could well be the 2012 moment, because we're clearly on the brink of destruction. And the more and more history is revealed, we were so close to having total nuclear annihilation as recent as 1984, when Russia and the United States were right in the middle of the Cold War. And that's just now starting really to become public. And so we're either going to blast ourselves like that and no one's going to know what happened, or we're just going to start taking those steps and say we've got to elevate our consciousness and get to the next higher level. And it's going to take some really profound leadership to be able to do that. And hopefully we're going to start to see some of those players come on the stage, world stage here.
Now, one thing that's been an underlying thread in a lot of these discussions, and I think it's probably going to be an underlying thread in some of my newer work, is the power of the individual. There's so many people that say, you know, the problem's too big, the government's too big, it's all too big, mm-hmm. I can't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that it doesn't start by trying to change out here, it starts by trying to change in here.
Right.
For somebody who doesn't really get that,
mm-hmm.
talk to them.
Well, you know, think of yourself on a ship that's sinking. You know, you can either fend for yourself or you can start to act with the collective, team up with people and work in small groups. That's kind of the analogy of where we're at right now. The ship could be sinking, and it's like, if you want to be the lone gunman out there on your own trying to do it, that's one way to go about it. But it's important to get into clusters of people that share your values and can share information with you. But then what it comes back to is individuals kind of just finding that hero within. And that's what happens when disaster strikes, when a ship is sinking, is that the heroes emerge. And the heroes are motivated by the group, but they're taking individual action. And that's kind of where we all have to start looking right now, is becoming that hero.
You know, as far as this next generation of humans, there,
mm-hmm.
you know, I interviewed some people last night, and they're talking about, you know, these kids are coming along and they're so evolved and they're so knowledgeable.
Right.
And they have this innate knowledge. Now, do you think that that's a galactic shift, or do you think that that's just the next logical progression of normal evolution of a species?
When you talk about the next level of human, I started really looking at this in detail in my book, Cloak of the Illuminati. I got a hold of a government report that was promoting advanced technology. And basically what it said was that our genetic technology, our computer technology, our neuroscience, and our nanotechnology are all going to become one technology in the next couple of decades. All of it. Genes, bits, neurons, and atoms. And I found an acronym out of that, BANG, B-A-N-G. Bits, atoms, neurons, genes. So all your computer technology, everything is going to become just seamless, going to become one thing. And where's it all directed? This report answered the question. They said it's time now for us to start promoting the idea of wearable computing, that people will start wearing the Bluetooth devices, and they'll get used to that. It used to be we had a desktop computer, then you got a laptop, now you got a palm top. Well, where it's going is in the palm, okay? And so I'm looking at this going, well, this is pretty frightening, you know, because what they're saying next is that wearable computing is an intermediate step. Where we really envision this going, this is a U.S. government report, where we really envision this going is in the human skin. Human skin, in fact, is the next platform for development of computer technology. And Microsoft's got all kind of patents to that effect of the human body as a power device and this sort of thing. And so I'm looking at that going, well, wait a minute, that's really kind of inconsistent with all this sort of indigo business that's going on, where we're talking about highly advanced beings coming in with a higher consciousness. You know, how are the two going to interface? And is this, in fact, a galactic imperative? Well, as I was looking at the genes, bits, neurons, and atoms, it occurred to me that those are just simply earth, air, fire, and water, the same old four elements, retuned, or at a another level of expression. And what has to happen to make earth, air, fire, and water work is you've got to have the fifth element, spirit, the quintessence, the life force energy come in and make it all click. And that's where I think these higher consciousness kids will come into the picture, because I just have a sense they're going to reject that technology. I mean, I know some of these kids now, they don't have the cell phone up to their ear. They think that's dangerous. They text one another. They're not about putting technology in their body. They're not like the suits you see at the airport with the Bluetooth hanging out of their ear. And I think they have an innate kind of understanding or recognition that, wait a minute, I don't want computers in my skin. I don't want to become an iBod, in other words. And so that's the role that they're going to play, is to kind of uphold this other idea that we can do this with the same old four elements, earth, air, fire, and water, and we can do it with consciousness. And it's going to be really important that they do that.
Cool. Yeah, you're talking about Homo cyberneticus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so, I mean, you see that expressed in like movies all the time, where now this, I called it the cloak of the Illuminati, because it literally is a power garment, and it's incredibly attractive for kids looking at films like Iron Man or others, where they show that the way to achieve true power is to jump in one of these power suits. I mean, that's all happening now. And what they need is a model that shows them that's a possibility, and perhaps there's nothing wrong with that, but if you focus and direct your energies over here and developing consciousness, the payoff's going to be a lot bigger.
Now, this is another digression, but do you see a possibility that there could be in the future literally a splinter of human evolution, where some embrace the integration with the machine and others embrace the spiritual integration, and that, you know, 100 years from now, there's the people that are modified and the people that are what would the word be, pure?
Yeah, I mean, people ask me all the time, do you think that there's going to be this shift or this change where there's going to be, you know, a fork in the road? And I think we're already at that fork in the road. I don't think it's 100 years from now. I don't think it's 10 years from now. It's today. You know, just walk, like I say, walk through the shopping mall, walk through the airport, look at the Bluetooth devices with the blinking lights, you know, and know that that's just a couple of years away from going outside the ear into the ear. They want to take the cell phone and put it in our teeth, you know, and it's like once that happens, now we come to the last layer of that government report, which was, along with this advancing technology and the fusion of these technologies into a seamless unity, we also need to promote the idea of the hive mind. And the government's saying, okay, we're going to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars starting to promote the hive mind, because that's ultimately going to help us to bring this technology online. And so we're already at that point right now, and it's something that I think I've said in presentations and elsewhere that I think we have less than 3 years from 2009. Before 2012, they're going to try and put that chip in us. And then, of course, I get the feedback from others that saying, you know, the chip is so old technology. You know, they're already doing it with this advanced mind control stuff that they're not even going to go that way anymore. So, you know, it still remains to be seen. But I think that's the issue of our time right now. Absolutely.
Is the chip and the integration of that?
Yeah. Yep, in the hive mind, and giving up your individual free will so that you can then be part of a collective.
You know, people that follow this topic have a fairly decent understanding of the whys, but go ahead and just lay it out. Why is there a force that wants to see this happen to people, that wants to see humanity go in that direction?
I ultimately believe in the idea of harvesting. This comes off some of the Jordan Maxwell axis of material, where even going back into the ancient world, our body is viewed as an energy device, and that there is a race of beings. Go into the Nag Hammadi library and you find books like the Hymn of the Pearl, and the another is called the Hypostasis of the Archons, or the Reality of the Rulers. And you have very explicit conversations between Jesus and Mary Magdalene, where they're describing a race of beings called Archons that some think are like the reptilians or the gray type aliens. And they're explicitly described in there as toll collectors. They're further described by Jesus as our cousins. Okay? And so when you put this whole picture together, it suggests, well, wait a minute, they've been involved with our race for a long time, and they're they are toll collectors. They're harvesting something from us. Robert Monroe has written about this, calling the substance they harvest louche. And so that's the ultimate kind of end game in that scenario, is that there is this race of beings. It's a spiritual war that's going on. They're harvesting this energy or substance from us. And if you're awakened to it, then you can evade it. And in fact, that's what the whole Gnostic corpus of information is about, is where Jesus is coming back to Mary Magdalene reporting, here's how you evade the archons. This is how you navigate the afterlife so that you can get away from these guys. And so this is not a new conversation that we're having. It's just that we're now just becoming more aware of it.
I can't remember if I asked you this or not, but I don't think I did. 2012 itself, some mm-hmm. people think that it's this firm, solid marker in time where there's going to be a radical change, mm-hmm. and some people think that it's just a soft milestone,
right,
indicating, you know, that we're on a certain evolutionary path, but that nothing really super radical is going to happen at
right.
that date. Let's talk about what you think is the potential of 2012 as it comes up.
Well, I mean, when you're talking about 2012, I think we have to go back to at least the mid-80s or so, and that it's really more of a window in time. And I recently did an event with Richard Hoagland, and he always uses the NASA metaphor that 2012 is a window. And I agree to that to a large extent, that it's not a single moment, that it is this window in time. Where I kind of shift away from the whole window concept is that when you look at what the Mayans are saying about 2012, they describe more of a gateway or the opening of a door. And as I reflect on that, it's like, well, is there much difference between a door and a window? And in fact, there is. You know, if you come to my house, I'm going to ask that you come through the door. You know, light comes through the window. I look out my window. My cats look out the window. So if we keep thinking of this as a window, you know, we're looking for light to come in or something like that. But if we instead adopt the metaphor that it's in fact a door, now we're talking about something coming and going. And that does seem to kind of more express the idea of an exact moment when that door opens. And so, you know, will there be first contact in 2010, as Arthur C. Clarke talked? Will that be part of the run-up to 2012? I think it's a pretty good possibility. I think things are setting up for that right now, and that could be the ultimate 2012 event.
Now, as we talk about the concept of being energetically harvested for different uh-huh. types of, I get emotional energy, different types of,
right.
of energy output mm-hmm. that fuels another realm.
Right.
And we talk about that. The illusion of this matrix and the energetic war that's going on outside of it mm-hmm. are so fused together that we can actually we can fight the energetic war within the illusion of the matrix, just like in the movie. So
right.
kind of give me that back and elaborate on it if you like.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's no question that we seem to be in a simulated reality here. And so again, this is the hero idea. We're all writing the story here. And what we need to focus on is like, okay, at this moment, if you use like the Joseph Campbell model, the 12 aspects of the story that are in every great ancient myth or modern screenplay.
The hero's journey,
yeah. We selected the mission. We got our guides. We're good to go. We went through the incubation, came out the birth portal. Now we're in the Earth School of Ascension, and that's the movie that we're all in right now. And here come the tests and the allies and the enemies that we're ultimately going to have to overcome in the inmost cave, which could be another really good metaphor for 2012, is this is the darkest hour before it becomes dawn. This is where we're going to capture the prize, or we're going to just kind of have to go back and start all over again. But I think that what everyone has to recognize is that they're all players in this drama. And as Campbell suggests, focus on the end. What is the celebration at the end that we're seeking here, and start aiming ourselves towards that.
I think that was the last question.
Okay.
So is there anything I didn't get that you want to comment on?
No.
I thought that was
mm-hmm.
pretty good.
Cool.
Yeah. Okay.
Excellent.
And one last message to people that are just a positive message for creating this outcome. Oh, that was the other thing, creating reality.
But, uh-huh.
We can do that one. The nature of our ability to create our own reality.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you think the barriers and limitations come from that, or if there even are any? So in other words, like I was talking to Greg Braden, and it's all about what you believe. If you believe that you can walk through that wall, you're going to walk through it. That's
right.
Belief is the speed limit. Belief is the brick wall that you run into that creates the limitations. So let's talk about creating your own reality
mm-hmm.
and how belief plays into that, and how far you can take that if mm-hmm. you empower your own beliefs.
Yeah. I wrote my, the first book I wrote was 1990-91. It's called Junior Cosmic Egg. It was the story of a cosmic egg named Junior who wanted to grow up to become his own universe. And his motto was, imagine it, believe it, live it. That was his message. Then, I don't know, 15 years later, I start researching the Tibetan idea of the rainbow body and their conception that you can take this mortal coil and accelerate the vibration and spin it into a vortex of pure energy so that all remains is five-colored rainbow light. And you've achieved what they call the great perfection. The Tibetans tell you that it's really simple to achieve. All you have to do is get introduced to your true nature, directly introduced to it. You have to be able to imagine your true nature. Then they said, you have to believe this. And you can never waver from this belief that you can become this being of light. And then the third thing they said you have to do is you have to live your life with the expectation that this is going to occur. You have to do it. And so, you know, really the only limit is what we, not only what we imagine and what we believe, but it's also willing, what we're willing to do in order to make that imagination happen. So I think you have to go a little bit beyond belief and into the actual action and doing. And once you put all that together, then the ultimate human transformation happens.
Yeah, I call that the mechanics of manifestation. It's something that we're really exploring is, yeah, it's not just enough to believe. It's like,
right,
you know, when The Secret came out, right?
Right.
I wait to see a newspaper article, you know, a guy found dead in an apartment clutching an imaginary steering wheel. But
right.
Yeah, that's really, really good that you touched on that.
Yeah.
One last question. If we were able to collectively come to an evolution that is beneficial for the future of humanity, do we evolve out of this physical realm? Does it change?
I think we do evolve out of this physical realm. I think, yeah, definitely we do go to a higher, finer realm. That's what all the ancient spiritual traditions teach. They call it, in Egypt, they called it the field of the blessed. And I think of the field as a dimension of the blessed. And I think there is a whole other place, sort of like in the way I envision that is that Robin Williams movie, What Dreams May Come. I think that's a really good analogy to the ancient Egyptian conception of this next place that we go to. So it's definitely another place.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, well, great.
What about the children or the people who just don't believe? There was a gentleman that came in here with his mother, and he doesn't believe anything that's going on in his building. And you mentioned the belief part.
Yeah.
There's young people and old people out there that just don't believe.
Yeah. That's okay.
Do you have a message for them? It's like, hey,
keep on believing.
I call them placeholders. I'm not sure.
Placeholders. Yeah.